Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and among the bizarre headlines that have come to characterize our 2016 election season, we've seen a throwback of sorts and a renewed emphasis on Russia's relationship with the United States, right? Joining me now is independent Russian journalist Mikhail Zygar, whose new book, All the Kremlin's Men Inside the Court of Vladimir Putin, challenges the popular narrative regarding Russia's strongman president by presenting a portrait of a politician bound in many respects to the shifting whims of his inner circle. Mikhail Zygar, welcome to WNYC.
Hello.
And you're joining us from Moscow today, just letting everybody know that. And you've
sketched, yes, absolutely. You've
sketched a portrait of a leader who doesn't have a strategic vision, the opposite of what Americans have been coming to believe. Instead, you characterize Putin as mostly reactive to events around him. He doesn't have a strategic vision?
All the facts that we know about him and about his inner circle probably since the very beginning of his first presidency shows us that he usually uses tactics, and all of his decisions are tactical, and usually he follows the circumstances and tries to react as fast as possible, but he doesn't have any kind of master plan he has been following since the beginning of his presidency 17 years ago.
Americans look at what's been going on in Syria, for example, though, and think, boy, he seems like somebody who does have a master plan for expanding his influence in the Middle East.
Putin has never been interested in what was happening in the Middle East until the year of 2014. Until that year, he started having real problems in Ukraine. And only when he found himself as a kind of outcast for the outside world, and when he found out that no one wants to talk to him, and no one wants to discuss any global issues apart from the problems of Ukraine, he has never paid attention to Middle East and to situation in Syria, really. But actually, his main goal and his most important dream for him is to be treated as an equal partner, probably, and as one of the major global players. Let me call this the member of the board of the World Inc.
Well, that makes it sound so much like it's about his own sense of pride as an individual, rather than being out for the interests of Russia in a larger sense, like maybe developing Russia's oil market or making sure they have access to cheap oil from a place like Syria to import to Russia. You think it's a lot about just Putin's sense of personal pride?
You know, that's not about economics, absolutely. Because, for instance, probably you've heard the word Gazprom, that used to be the most important, the biggest company in Russia.
Oil company.
That's gas company that produces natural gas and exports it to Europe mainly. And, it used to have control of let's say half of European natural gas market, and actually using Gazprom as a weapon and as a leverage to put pressure on Europe, Putin has never followed economic interests of Gazprom, and actually the company is now having huge economic problems because it was always used as political instrument. But at the same time, if we're speaking about the motivations of President Putin, is it his personal pride or what it seems to him to be national pride? probably he's not the only one who wants to feel that sense of national pride and that sense of Russia being respected, Russia being treated as a superpower. It's very popular with many people in Russia because many people still have deep psychological trauma back from the beginning of 90s when they felt the sense of humiliation because the economic situation after the collapse of Soviet Union was very bad and that's why many people feel nostalgia about those stable Soviet times. And Russian propaganda is now using that feeling, and it's sometimes it's sincere. It's sincere for Putin, and it's very sincere for many people in Russia.
My guest is independent Russian journalist Mikhail Zygar. With us live from Moscow, his new book is All the Kremlin's Men Inside the Court of Vladimir Putin. How does it look to you as an independent journalist in Moscow when you see Donald Trump apparently cozying up to Putin on the campaign trail here? Does it make sense to you why he's doing it? I wonder if you might have some insight in the context of your reporting that we might miss here in the States.
Your question was about Donald Trump, right?
Yeah. Why do you think Trump is cozying up to Putin?
You know, probably he's very close to Putin psychologically, because for Putin that's very important to build real personal relationships with any political partner, with any Western leader. And from the very beginning, he tried. Hard to make friends with George W. Bush and with Tony Blair, ex-British Prime Minister. And that was really important for him because probably that's something of his KGB experience. He wanted to have eye contact with his partner, or I don't know.
Well, you say that, and it reminds me that George W. Bush, as president, famously claimed to have glimpsed Putin's soul after having only made eye contact and decided this is a man you could do business with.
Exactly. And as I describe it in my book, that was right after their first meeting in Ljubljana, in Slovenia, when Putin, who knew how religious George Bush was, started their first conversation with an old story of his life that he had his country house burned and only wooden cross escaped from that fire. Yeah. And that made Putin feeling very religious. And that story impressed George W. Bush as well. But after that, after the first years of Putin contacts with Bush and Blair, he finally felt disappointed with that type of political leaders. He thinks they are not sincere. He prefers another type, people whom he thinks they are more practical, more skeptical, and probably cynical, like Silvio Berlusconi or Gerhard Schröder. And actually, Donald Trump, as man from business, is exactly the same type of guy. Putin usually distrusts people who are speaking of like values or human rights. He is absolutely sure that all the politicians are the same. They are all dirty bastards, actually. And he really believes in a TV series called The House of Cards. That's very funny that he recommends to his ministers to watch HBO's Netflix House of Cards.
And yet you write that as late as 2015, Putin had crafted a plan that saw Russia teaming up with the U.S. specifically to wipe out ISIS. Now, in the news this very day is the apparent fact that Putin is kind of faking in this deal that he made with John Kerry to do exactly that, and he's really out to support Assad and other anti-U.S. interests in that war. But do you think that Putin felt let down by the United States and maybe by Tony Blair, that he wanted a certain kind of relationship and the West sort of rejected him and now we're paying the price?
That's for sure. For sure, he feels that he was betrayed, because let me remind you that initially, in the beginning, Putin was not that anti-Western politician as he seems now. Back in 2002, 2003, he asked that time Secretary General of NATO, Lord George Robertson, to invite Russia to join NATO. But Lord Robertson responded that, we had certain procedure. You should fill in the application form and then stand in the line, because there are tiny republics of Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania standing there. And that seemed kind of humiliation for Putin, because he thought he deserves a personal invitation. After all, he's got a certain degree of paranoia. He thinks that there is distrust. He thinks that there is some kind of American conspiracy to overthrow him. He really thinks that many color revolutions that happened in neighboring countries, including revolution in Ukraine, were a consequence of American conspiracy. And finally, there is a plan in the United States to overthrow him as well. And actually, he thinks that the only reason distrust of Bashar al-Assad of Syria is that Assad is pro-Russian leader. He usually asks, as many Russian politicians do, why United States are so mad with Bashar al-Assad and absolutely happy with, let's say, King of Saudi Arabia,
right,
or other dictators from Middle East. And for Putin, the only answer is because Bashar al-Assad is Russian
ally. Yes.
Russian.
We're just about out of time. I'm just curious if you feel threatened at all as an independent Russian journalist in Moscow, writing a book like this. Putin has seemed to be very active in clearing the decks of opposition journalists or even truth-telling journalists.
You know, it's not easy to be an independent journalist in Russia. But as I've mentioned, there is no plan in most of Putin politics. So he has never had a plan to destroy independent media, and that's why independent media exists, and it's still possible to work. But normally, there is some kind of dilemma for any journalist. You can be either successful, either prosperous or independent. If you want to be independent journalist, that means that you should be miserable, and you're going to have tiny audience, and you won't have solved that much money that state-owned companies can have.
So the apparently miserable Mikhail Zygar, who maybe will grow his audience, at least in
still
the United
States. Still very optimistic.
Miserable and optimistic. And the author of a brand new book, All the Kremlin's Men Inside the Court of Vladimir Putin. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, our own John Keefe with Family Projects for Smart Objects, tabletop projects that respond to your world. John Keefe here in a minute. Stay with us.